Tara Martin Lopez is working on a book about the El Paso punk scene that will be published by UT Press, which is tentatively titled Chuco Soundtrack El Paso Punk. She's been conducting a whole lot of research in our area and recently had an article called Vamos Pal Chuco, Punk Rock, Power, and Memory in El Paso, Texas, published in the Journal of Texas Music History. She's in town now, continuing her research, so I figured it'd be a good time to check in with her. Today, my guest is Tara Martin Lopez. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Hi, Marina. It's nice to see you and talk to you.
It is nice to see you and talk to you. And the other thing that, you know, as you and I have gotten to know each other, the thing that I find refreshing is that you're not from here. So tell us, how did you come to say, like, kind of become this expert in the El Paso punk scene?
Three things. Well, one, I was born in Cruces, so I'm not from too far away.
Adjacent, yeah.
Yeah, distant, and I'm very proud to be New Mexican. So the second part is many of us New Mexicans love El Paso. We have a big time crush on your city. So I'm just one of the many that have a crush on your city. Three, I was in the scene in Albuquerque. And so many of the musicians like Mikey Morales, Ernesto Ibarra, Serge Mendoza, and others came up and I had a connection via them. I knew Mikey a little bit more. And yeah, so as a sociologist, I've always been interested in how people are creative in creating agency, especially through music. And so it's the fusion of all my loves of looking at creative people. And then one of the, probably my favorite city in the world is El Paso.
I'm with you. So it's my favorite city in the world too. Welcome.
We have a lot in common.
Okay, so tell us, why the El Paso punk scene? I mean, you talked about the communities and everything, but you are like in it. So tell us about that.
So what particularly about the El Paso punk scene, and it's one, a broader thing, and then two, a very specific thing, you know, a broader approach to really just punk rock itself. What is really important for me is that we need to extricate whiteness from punk rock. And that comes from a Black zinester from Chicago, who people of color and also women of color, especially women of color like yourself, because you were very involved in that scene. So thank you, Marina. Mm-hmm. It's really important to divest that sense that punk rock is quote unquote white or a white boy thing. And that's personally important to me as, you know, a mixed race woman of color that was involved in the scene, because I saw women like you, Marina, that we're doing all these awesome things. I was mainly at the shows just being goofy, but awesome women like you, but also many people of color. So that's really, really important to me. And I think it's very important for other kids of color that are into any kind of music, but in particular punk rock scenes, so they can start to see themselves and say, yeah, this belongs to me, because punk rock belongs to everyone. And in particular about El Paso is that it's like New Mexico in that sense, right? I'm very, very proud of being New Mexican. I love New Mexico and I love El Paso. But I think both areas are constantly seen in a very limited way of cowboys and tumbleweeds and really not any depth, especially to the people of color that live here. And so I think it's really important to see all the dynamic things that punks like yourselves did, Marina, in order to shed light on how diverse and complex and creative this area is.
Well, you know, what's funny is that, you know, having grown up in the scene and being a part of it is, I mean, we're all brown. So even the white people here are brown to an extent, you know. So being here and being a part of it, you didn't feel that. But I think our bands that toured definitely got a taste of that otherness that does exist within, you know, I guess everything, including punk. But it's not until we left our little cocoon that you feel that. I don't know if you've had any conversations with any of the touring bands or if they've any anecdotes in those regards.
I think as, and I can't remember anything specifically, but what it resonates with in talking about the next generation, because at the top of my head, I can't really think of anything specifically about when they toured. I oftentimes ask so many questions about them here in El Paso, but that cocoon experience is very similar to the small town that I live in Española. And, you know, mm-hmm. It's 71% Chicano and then indigenous with a very small spattering of white folk. And actually, it's much more diverse here. And there are Asian folk also and Black folk in Española, but not as big as you all have, you know, the strong communities that you all have here. When I talk to students, they oftentimes see themselves as, well, everybody looks like me. And then they go outside. So, you know, even someone like, I'm very, very light complected and my mom is white. So I was like, well, I'm good. You know, like nobody's going to discriminate against me. And then I moved to Ohio. I lived in England. I finished grad school in England and I lived in Washington. And even me, who's very, you know, have a lot of white privilege, there were levels of exclusion, definitely. Or when my family would visit me in these different places, I definitely felt how differently I got treated versus them. So that experience of being outside of the cocoon. And I think that's really important for those youngsters, again, to see what you all did, to see that, yeah, they might have a cocoon, but then there are other experiences when they live outside of being sometimes disconnected, discriminated against, treated unfairly, and so forth.
You said you like to look into things in the context of music. Has it mainly been punk rock, or have you delved into other genres?
So I did write a chapter on Bad Brains. So I'm very interested in punk rock and people of color. And even in grad school, I was doing that. But my first book was actually based in England, and it was about working class women involved in strikes. But there were a lot of women of color. And there's the other thing. There's this image of England as like, oh, it's all white and everybody's in carriages. And no, that's just a perception as well. There's a lot of hardworking people, white and black and brown, that affected a form of agency, meaning they were involved in strikes, especially like poor women that were nurses and women that worked in cafeterias. They were actually out on strike. So I'm always interested in people doing those types of creative things. It's just now that I'm getting later in my life where I'm like, well, really, I love punk rock. I did interview some really great people here in El Paso that were involved in the hip hop scene, the freestyle hip hop scene, and they are wonderful. It's just, I don't have enough information and enough interviews with them to create an entire book. And I'm not as well versed in it. So I do want to write an article on that component, but I just don't feel, and actually, even when I talk to individuals like yourselves, I'm like, do I really know that much about punk rock? The list of bands, I was like, oh, I don't know that band. But, you know, people are cool with me. So that's great. Cause, you know, like, I know I love the bands I do, but like some individuals like yourself or Erica Ortelon or Alex Martinez, these long lists of bands and, you know, this and this and this history of that band. And I'm like, I really like Bikini Kill.
But that's the thing, right? It's a whole exploration thing. And like, you know,
what I love are the people, and that's the sociologist in me. Like, I love the people and how people connect with music. So that's really actually the most important part for me. There's a really great podcaster, Hanif Abdurraqib. You probably know who he is because he writes articles on NPR. He's a great cultural critic. And he does have that encyclopedic knowledge of music, rap, punk, R&B, everything. But he is also concerned with the people. And that's what I like about his writing is when he talks about, because we have a heart to it. You know, we have a love of it. And there has to be the love. And that's what I like about it. Even though I'm not a psychologist, I love, that's where the love part. I feel like I'm saying love quite a lot when I'm talking to you.
No, but it's a beautiful thing. And you know, what I found refreshing is that you're not from here and you took an interest in our scene, because so many people from here have attempted to do exactly what you're doing, but it's hard because, you know, we all have our own biases. We all, you know, well, this should be in there, that shouldn't be in there. But I love that you're looking at the whole thing. I know you've talked to a lot of people that have attempted this. So yeah, why not write about the scene in Albuquerque versus El Paso?
It's probably because of the same reason. I have my biases. You know, I might not have had, you know, personal connections with people, like a clique. And also, though, what I found really, or I find so fascinating about your scene is that in Albuquerque, there seemed to be a dichotomy between being punk rock and then your Chicano, Mexicano identity, especially Chicanos and Mexicano identities, were seen as different. Like, so in my family, like the Chicano side of my family is like, why are you doing this punk thing? Why don't you wear some lipstick and comb your hair? Which I finally did. I finally combed my hair for once. And I wear the lipstick and all that. And it was my Chicana friends that they would expose me to like Shakira and what we called like Spanish music, but it wasn't being Spanish. It was like, this is who we are. This is where we're singing songs in Spanish that valorize who we are as Chicanas. But you all did it at this, you put the punk.
Yeah, it's all in there.
It's all, yeah, it's all mezclado. And yeah, that's why I'm all jealous. I didn't really feel that there were a lot of bands that did that. Maybe there were, and I just didn't know about them, but the scene didn't feel like that. It felt like when you entered punk, you kind of had to leave your culture at the door. And that's my experience. It just didn't necessarily mean that it's representative of other people in Burke, but I feel like you all, you just brought it all in, and then you put something else in there and added some cucumbers and some pepper and whatever else. And there you go.
And parents and family and grandmas and grandpas, like, you know, it was a family kind of a thing.
And that's why I'm really interested in, so when I was in England, I really went there with the intention of studying social movements, like people coming together to change the world. But there were a lot of people in England that were the first to study music scenes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of academics like Stuart Hall that come from England that studied punk rock for the first time, that studied hip hop, etc. But the guy I worked with, or one of the guys that I worked with, Nick Crossley, he developed this idea of rather using scenes, this idea of music worlds, because it's more community focused. And I think that idea is much more representative of what you all did. Because for instance, one anecdote, when I'm sorry, I didn't have an anecdote about coming out of the cocoon, but it was like Alex Martinez was talking about when he and others created the Rugburn on Alameda Street, right? Mm-hmm. It was just like, you all created this venue on your own in this like mechanic shop and everything. But there was a family living upstairs. So you all would have shows, it'd get too loud, and then they turn the breakers off, and then you have no show. And get me wrong, I'd probably do that if I got to go to sleep. Come on, let's turn the punk rock show off.
Absolutely. It's loud.
And then Alex said, well, I was like, I talked to the family, and the family, we created an arrangement, and they would actually bring the little kids sometimes into the show so they could sell, like, I don't know, cacahuates and sodas and no sé qué, right? Like a combination. And there was all this kind of community engagement. And then also with the backyard shows, families were invested in it. You know, mm-hmm. moms would sell burritos. Parents would have to like put up with like an electrical cord going through the windows into their bedroom so the show would go on. And that's not, they're not wearing like Descendant shirts. They're not going to the shows, but they're in the shows, but they're at the heart of that community. And so I like how it's much more of a music world rather than just a scene. I use the term scene because it's more common, but really what you guys created was a music world because everybody was invested. And just in your case, you were talking to me about how your father would lend you vans to help put on shows and events. I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. That's how it should be.
That's how it was. So we're out of time, but I want to ask you one more question that hopefully doesn't freak you out. And it's, when does your book come out?
So I have a plan and I have a contract, so it does have to come out. So my manuscript has to be submitted in January. So the expected date would be very late 2022. But more than likely early 2023.
There has to be a book release party in El Paso if you're writing about the El Paso scene. So next time you and I talk, it's because the book is here and we're going to invite everybody to the party. How's that?
I'm there.
Awesome. Today, my guest has been Tara Martin Lopez. She's working on a book about the El Paso punk scene. Thank you so much for coming to State of the Arts.
Thank you.